Right? You're like, that buzzer ain't rang. That game ain't over with. So keep going.
I had a dream I could buy my way to heaven. When I
have thrived, you know, in that chaos.
I told God I'll be back in a second. Man, it's so hard.
How could this be happening? Did any of you guys pay attention to anything I said? Like,
get arrested, guess until he get the message.
Welcome back to the Reckless CEO Podcast, where we keep it real, raw, and reckless about business and life.
They ain't really got the sauce, and I ain't got, you know what I mean? It's like,
here is your host, the Reckless CEO himself, Michael McGovern.
And some stuff like that, it's crazy.
I fully believe that.
Yeah, man.
What's that?
I got people speaking with deceased relatives during their trials.
Really?
And stuff like that, yeah, bro. It's crazy.
That is crazy. So tell me, I know last time that we had talked, and he kind of overheard you too, I think. You were saying, didn't you say that you started the facility, but you haven't practiced it in a while? Didn't you say that? Like, you kind of had your experience, and then you started the business, and you don't?
Yeah.
Is that the case?
No, I had years of 25 years worth of psychedelic experience under my belt, and a lot of it was recreational when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But I fell into substance abuse issues and alcohol problems for a lot of years of my life because I was self-medicating underlying issues, and I had eating addiction issues and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the truth is that once I started to apply psychedelic medicines therapeutically to my life, It completely changed everything. I used DMT, LSD, MDMA, psilocybin mushrooms. I had some incredibly healing experiences on the other medicines, and they really propelled me forward in my healing journey. But ketamine was like the icing on the cake for me. Mm. I did the treatments when we opened up our facility, and that was about 4 years ago, and I haven't done any ketamine treatments or taken any other psychedelics since I did the treatments at the facility.
Wow, dude.
Yeah, man.
Man, that's crazy. Dang. Powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ketamine did for me what the other compounds didn't do because it treated my symptoms. Mm. I had these super spiritual experiences on DMT and these very, in psilocybin mushrooms, very enlightening experiences.
Yeah.
But what the ketamine did for my depression, anxiety, and PTSD, the other ones didn't touch. And I was using medical cannabis very heavily before I did the ketamine treatments as well because I was medicating my PTSD with it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize it because I just used it throughout my whole life. So I just thought, oh, this is just a part of me.
Yeah.
And then it was weird because after I did the ketamine, my symptoms were gone and the cannabis didn't do for me what it used to do for me.
Wow.
And it just got me super stoned and I wasn't productive.
Yeah, yeah.
And my tolerance completely flipped from being super high tolerance to where I would take, 10 milligrams of THC and I'd be completely through the roof.
Yeah.
And so I actually quit using cannabis because of the ketamine treatment.
Does ketamine help to reset your receptors in a way? Is that?
So this is a mental reset.
Yeah.
It's and basically it's like, I refer to it as a Control-Alt-Delete for the old program that no longer serves us, and it allows us to put a new program into place. Ketamine causes new neuroplasticity in the brain. Think of our brain like a ski slope, like the side of a mountain, right? And there's a snow layer that went down and there's these tracks that are embedded that there are daily practices, whether it be feelings of depression and anxiety or things like that.
Yeah.
New neuroplasticity is like going in and putting a new layer of snow down, and then we can put new paths, new routes down where we're literally reprogramming our lives to feel happier and more positive and all of these other healthy lifestyle practices that we encourage people to do at our facility.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
That's incredible, bro.
Thanks, bro.
I got to come down for sure, dude. I got to.
100%.
I need the experience. I want the experience. I don't need it. I want it. You know what I mean? Because you always feel, there was definitely a season of my life where I did, I was doing psychedelics a little more often. And, I felt like it made some major moves. And then, you just get back into routine and you don't take the time to take the time and. But for me, every time I've ever done it, I've always had on the other side of it, even if you're going through it when you're in it, the other side is like, oh, wow, like, I needed that. That was something. It wasn't a bad trip. It wasn't this. It was like, that's what my experience had become, was that. And the reset was incredible.
Yeah. Know? Well, you know, like one of the angles that we're actually getting into right now is a lot of successful entrepreneurs like yourself.
Yeah.
It's high paced. We're super stressed out. We have anxiety, all of this stuff, because there's so many things flying at us from different directions.
Yeah.
And when you actually like take a minute to unplug and shut it down for a second,
yeah,
and like use this medicine to tap into higher states of consciousness,
yeah,
people are coming out of their treatments with new business ideas. They're journaling down stuff that's making them create new companies.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, Elon Musk has been talking about ketamine in the news and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like a lot of these high-functioning, very successful entrepreneurs are using psychedelics to help them propel forward in their business life as well.
100%.
Yeah, man.
Nah, I agree to that. Because it's what was it? Elon Musk even said something like, you know, entrepreneurship is like chewing on glass, staring at the abyss or something like that. You know what I mean? Just that's the side of it that just, you know, it gets lonely, man, you know, and you've got a lot of pressure. Like the guy I just had in here talking on the podcast, you know, he was sharing that's like there's a lot of things that people don't see that is more parts to it than what we think it is, right? It's like we, you know, as you build a company, people to see certain things as the pressures, the stress, all of that. You can't let that, you know, trickle into anybody else. So it's like you carry the weight, you figure it out. And, you know, a lot of times I think it builds us and we grow through it and whatnot, but you have to get into those things that allows you to disconnect it. Because even just the disconnect of going to the treatment center and disconnecting for an hour is more valuable than never doing it.
100%.
Right? It's like that forced slowdown.
It's you know, it's self-love, man.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's like it really is. It's like it's doing something very personal for yourself and very good for yourself. Like I know some of the stuff I'll talk about might sound a little bit crazy, but just bear with me and roll with me here, because like it's actually what I, you know, preach and it's what I've applied to my life to get to where I'm at. And it's like, I believe that we're the manifestors of our own reality and like we're the co-creators of existence, right? So my outer world is a direct reflection of my inner world.
Mm-hmm.
This is where that cliche saying comes from, where it's like, as I heal myself, I heal the world.
Yeah.
And so it's like when you go and do a psychedelic experience like that and really give yourself that self-care and self-love and go within, deep within, in this chemically induced meditative state and heal certain parts about yourself from the inside, that manifests out into your life on the outside.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I got people that'll hate their job and they come in and they're miserable and they're depressed and they start doing the treatments. And then like, you know, halfway through their treatments are done, they're like, I got a different job offer or like, you know, I got a promotion or something like that. Or like the guys that are in a really bad, or women that are in a really bad relationship or something like that. And they, you know, find the strength halfway through their treatments to stand up for themselves and not let people treat them a certain kind of way. And then like they might meet somebody new, or like, you know, a year down the road, I'll talk to one of our clients and it's like they found the perfect partner now and they have this amazing happy life, where that was the complete opposite of where they were at when I first met them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you know, the what is it? The vision we see on the stage in our mind, right? It starts to become that reality.
Yeah.
Right? We don't realize. I was having a conversation actually while I was on some psychedelics with a couple of us there a couple weeks ago, and or probably 2 months ago. And, you know, we were sitting there talking and it was all these things of, oh man, you remember, you know, 6 months ago we talked about this and like this, now it's here, right? This happened, that. And I had this kind of like, epiphany, if you will, right? I was like, how much of it is actually created in the state versus the action, right? It's like, how much gets created when we're in that altered state, where, you know, just thinking differently, thinking creative, and, you know, we think of a vision or something, and all of a sudden it's like, it happens. It's like, how much of that was actually created in that moment, the universe and everything else you started to put together that you didn't even realize? How much of it was actually built there versus what we think it was? And we're always like, I got to do the work and I'm doing these and I'm doing all of this hard stuff to be able to achieve that. Where it's, what about if we just focus on being able to put ourselves in that state, put ourselves in the opportunity to create more versus doing more?
Yeah. No, listen, like visualization and putting what I'd like to think, you know, because we're manifesting our reality, putting a polarity, or meaning putting my mental thought out into the universe that, okay, I want to manifest this, or I am manifesting this, right?
Yeah.
But then without action, there is no manifestation.
Yeah.
So I tell people, listen, you can manifest your own reality, but if you don't get off the couch, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? 100%. But like, going into these transcendent states and having these visualizations of things that you want to accomplish in life, or, you know, some things that maybe the universe are planting in your head that is going to manifest out.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, these compounds, I actually have conversations with people sometimes where I'm like, I believe you can manifest on the medicine. The thing is like, so like while we're sitting here having this conversation right now, we're using like 3 to 5% of our brain, which is a very small percentage, yeah, right? They did a clinical study out of the UK on brain activity on different psychedelic compounds, okay? Mm-hmm. They gave people psilocybin mushrooms, and it showed that 10% of the brain lit up from the mushrooms, right? Then they gave people LSD. LSD lit up 65% of the brain.
Wow.
Okay. Steve Jobs took LSD, had tons of insight, and created some amazing things,
yeah,
for the world.
Yeah.
Ketamine lit up over 85% of the brain like a Christmas tree.
Wow.
So it's like, are we starting to open up and awaken parts of our brain that have been dormant, and that we have the capabilities to do, wow, these things, and that psychedelics are the catalyst that's
to move the world?
You got it, man.
Dang.
Listen, I can sit here and talk mental health with people, and I can talk about substance abuse issues and all of these other things that psychedelics are so amazing for. Mm-hmm. But to me, this movement is about the transformation of humanity to a higher state of consciousness, mm, man. And it's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening, yeah, man.
Wow. Yeah, man. That is powerful. It's a whole different mission.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We're awakening humanity, man. It's, yeah, what it is. I literally have people coming out of their treatments at the facility, and they're like, I just woke up. Like, I just woke up. It's like they were in a slumber. I have people come out of their treatments too, and they're like, I just got unplugged from the Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, maybe we're not talking about the movie like with Keanu Reeves.
Right.
But, you know, society's in this.
Yeah.
The hamster wheel where everybody's running their fastest and they're not getting anywhere. Mm. And it's like, and I think that, like, you know, entrepreneurship and creating something is actually one of the first steps to breaking free from the Matrix.
It is. It is.
You know?
And then it's like the layers to the onion. Right.
Yes.
And I think that's where it can be a slippery slope either way, right? Because it's like you unplug by creating and realize that, okay, man, I got these powers. I can, you know, motivate people. I can inspire people. I can build this thing. And so it's like that's the first step into it. But then realizing that what got you there isn't going to get you to the next place, right? So many of us stay there, right? Because it's like you get in the cycle and then you're flowing and it's just like, here's how it's going to be. And it's, and you just, you know, you just continue to move that direction versus like, okay, what do I got to do to get to the next the level. Next thing. And a lot of it, I'm that next level because, and I feel like too, a lot of it is that, you know, for, you know, some people that you get to a certain point off of bad energy, right? Like you look at, you know, Michael Jordan, right? And how they talk about it on The Last Dance, right? He's like, I had a chip on my shoulder because of how I was like, where, like, if you continue to always use that energy, eventually it's only going to get you so far.
Yeah.
Right. And so like it's going to get you to there. But then you have to realize like, all right, what's the next thing that I have to do? Because you might be, you know, just based off being angry at your family and your parents and the people and all these things that can motivate you to get successful.
Yeah.
But then you're still thriving and growing out of that energy where it's like the only way to truly get to that next unlock and actually be like above the business. Right. Be seeing it from that 1,000-foot view is to tap in deeper and now evolve you even more.
100%.
Yeah.
You know, listen, man, when I first started out, because my life was a train wreck for so many years, I was looking for this outside validation all the time, right? And so it's like I was killing myself and going full throttle because I just wanted to prove myself to people, which wasn't exactly putting the best energy out because, yeah, it wasn't coming from a loving place. I can even talk about that with my fitness journey because, like, you know, I used to weigh almost 300 pounds, right? I used to go to the gym because I hated myself and I just wanted to get into better shape because I hated, yeah, the way I looked so much.
Yeah.
Now I work out because I love myself.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, I think in business, once you get to that place where you're not looking for outside validation anymore,
yeah,
and then you're coming from this, like, you know, okay, I'm just coming from the entrepreneurial heart set place,
yeah,
and, like, you know, I want to create something amazing that that's going to help people and help the world or whatever, stuff like that. This is that energy shift that you were just talking about.
Man, that's good.
Yeah, man.
Dang, that's so good, bro. I love that. What do you think, Tanner?
I think it's the deep truth that's running everything.
Yeah.
Y'all are talking on some real shit.
Yeah. Nah, I wish Reese was in here. He'd be, at least Reese would love my partner with the media company.
Yeah.
Reese, he's big into it. He loves his...
He'd be jaw-dropped right now.
Yeah, he loves these conversations, man. No, it's cool, man. And it's hard that, you know, it's hard to... Like, I feel like you probably deal with that a lot of being able to actually share the value in it, right? Because a lot of people, too, are very stubborn, right? Or things have been away for a long time. And so to them, like, the ketamine, the psychedelics, like, it still has that negative demeanor.
Yeah.
Right? It's a drug. Like, it's the way that they view it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, even be able to have your facility that you've – didn't you open it in COVID or something, too? Is that that happened?
We opened up our facility and did our first treatment a week before the lockdown. Okay, the hardest, and this goes to like show you about the laws of attraction and a positive mind state and like doing things, you know, from a heart-centered places. It was the hardest time probably in the history of mankind to start a company.
Yeah.
Not to mention, like, we didn't have any background in this.
Right.
I 6 months after my son was born, we were sitting there and I was telling my fiance at the time, I was like, listen, if I went through 20 years worth of misery and don't use what helped me to help other people is a waste of 20 years of my life. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to quit my jobs and let's take a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And let's start something amazing so we can help people heal. We opened up our clinic and anybody else would have probably thrown their hands up, but we were an essential business because we were a medical facility. And I said, don't pay attention to any of the chatter.
Yeah.
Laser focused on helping people heal.
Yeah.
Stay positive. Keep helping people heal. We were doing physical therapy at that time too, right? Then about 3 weeks into the company, one of our clients who had a stroke years before got into his G-Wagon and his foot jammed down and he drove his G-Wagon into our building, like not into the side, like his car was inside our facility.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, maybe this is a sign. Maybe we're not supposed to do this. I'm like, no, it's a test to see if we're going to quit. Mm-hmm. Just keep going. Keep staying positive. Now, 4 years later, we've done about 10,000 ketamine treatments.
Wow.
We've helped hundreds and hundreds of people get off of their pharmaceutical medications.
Yeah.
We're getting people off fentanyl addiction, alcohol abuse problems, any kind of substance abuse issues. And we're even getting people off of things like methadone and Subutex and Suboxone, these crutches that end people, like they get people off
from
of
from one thing to the next thing.
100%. Yeah. And it's because we're getting away from the pharmaceutical paradigm of let's treat your symptom and let's actually get to the root issue and the root cause of why people are self-medicating to begin with.
Yeah.
Back to what you were talking about with the taboos and stigmas, though, it's a battle we're fighting every day. But the truth is that was because of like the hippie counterculture in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
People were abusing and misusing the compounds for escape issues, and like they were trying to escape from the matrix, basically, or society, where now we're using them for the therapeutic value. What people don't know is that in the 50s and 60s, LSD was actually being studied for AUD or alcohol use disorder, and it was showing amazing efficacy. And what ended up happening is that the Vietnam War was going on and people were having these, this is what my opinion is. So I'm just letting people know that right now, but people were using these compounds and they didn't want to go to war anymore. Like they didn't want to fight anymore. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is that Nixon went and made all of the hallucinogens Schedule 1, meaning they had no kind of medicinal property. They couldn't even be studied for medicinal values.
Yeah.
And so they were put as Schedule 1. But ketamine fell through the cracks because ketamine is a dissociative and not a hallucinogen. So ketamine's always been Schedule 3. Now, the thing is that it's funny because, you know, when people think about ketamine, they think about, you know, Special K, a rave drug, or they think about it as a horse tranquilizer.
Right, the K-hole.
Yeah, 100%. Right. And the truth is that ketamine's safety profile is so amazing. They use it on animals also. It's also the number one choice for pediatric sedation. So for children 1.5 and older, they are using ketamine for surgery. If my 4-year-old needed surgery, they'd use ketamine on him because it's so safe. And we're doing it in sub-anesthetic doses at our facility, meaning we're giving people a fraction of what you'd give somebody going into surgery. Because if it was surgery time, it would be lights out. We don't want that. We want to give people just enough so they have these profound psychedelic experiences and remember the actual experience.
Yeah. Wow. Dang. That's incredible, man. Yeah, that's really cool, man. And so, like you said, I mean, what's your standard kind of treatment time frame, right? So you said that you kind of set somebody up to, you know, do a treatment, kind of integrate it.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
So our protocol at our facility is you get 2 meetings with our psychiatrist, 6 ketamine treatments, and integration through the process of the treatments with our team. Integration means actually processing these healing experiences. Mm. You know, a lot of clinics will just rely on the medicine. You go in, right. You get hooked up to an IV of ketamine, you go home, and it's like, that's not really going to help people.
Yeah, that's how mine was, the experience I had was that.
Yeah, that people are like falling short because the ketamine is just a tool and a catalyst. It really like gives you the opportunity to grab the reins and get rid of the symptoms. But now these deep healing experiences or these psychedelic experiences, we need to process through that and figure out what it actually meant and apply what we learned to our life. Alan Watts was a philosopher and he had these amazing, you know, speeches and sayings that he would say. And Alan Watts used to say, psychedelic medicines are like a telephone receiver. You pick up the receiver, you put it to your ear, you listen to the message, but then it's important to put the receiver back down and apply what you've learned to your life. Mm. See, this is when people get lost in the medicine if they don't integrate it properly because they're just looking for this next amazing experience, which they do give you some amazing experiences.
Right. But you're hooked on the experience.
100%. This is when you hear about people drinking ayahuasca every weekend and stuff like that. It's like one of the reasons that I was successful in my journey from using psychedelics to get to where I'm at now is that every time the medicine gave me a message, I listened and I was like, oh, okay, I need to fix this in my life. Yeah. And I applied that to my life. I wasn't just looking for the next message because like some of these experiences, people say they have burning bush divine experiences. You know, sometimes people say that like God literally talks to them and gives them messages of what they need to do with their life, or you just receive these messages and it pops in your head, right? Yeah. The thing is, though, is like that can be so amazing where you come out of that trip and you've got all of this information now and you're like so blown away by what you got from that. You're like, I need to do it again so I can get more information.
Yeah,
and now you're on this hamster wheel in itself
right.
of psychedelic experience to psychedelic experience. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't take the medicines anymore for one aspect is just because like one of the last treatments that I did, you know, I had this like death experience basically. And on the right, and I did not die, but like you have these like death
like
and
ego death kind of thing, right?
Yeah. 100%. And I went out into the abyss and I was like away from my family. And I, you know, I have this company that's helping people heal. I went through 20 years worth of a train wreck of a life.
Yeah.
And I finally got to the point where it's like, I got a beautiful woman and a baby boy in my life at the time. And I had this company that was helping people heal. And I'm like, I took the medicine and I died. I was like, I can't believe it. I made it through all of that. And now I took the medicine and I died. And I was just sitting there and it made me appreciate everything that I had in my life so much, my family and, you know, like my business. And it told me that I basically should have spent more time with my family and been a little bit more focused on that. And then I was like, man, I would give anything to get it back. And then the second time I said it, man, I would give anything to get it back. And I was back in my body and I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it now.
Yeah.
I got everything that I needed to get from the medicine. And now it's time for me to stay grounded in the present and
the people.
Manifest this healing.
And what I like about it too, is it, you know, you set the example for the medicine too, right? Because like you said, a lot of people that do these things, they chase the next trip and the next, and for you to say, I used the medicine. I needed the medicine. I used it. It helped me. It's improved my life. And now I don't need it anymore. Maybe there'll come a time where, hey, it's time for me to revisit and reset and all that. But until then, I don't need to, you know, be hooked on the medicine because the medicine gave me the result.
100%, man.
Yeah, man. Dang. That's so good, dude. That is so good, man.
Yeah, man.
How big's your, I mean, what's kind of the plan with the company? I mean, what's the vision for it? I mean, I know you're talking about some of the other stuff and, you know, what's the vision that you see for it?
I literally want to have clinics all over the world, man.
Yeah.
And like, listen, like people call me crazy and people tell me I'm a dreamer. And some of the guys actually that were in my advisors for a while, like, you know, like they have said to me, like, listen, like you need to get your head out of the clouds, man. And like, just like, you know, like be a little bit more grounded. And it's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm a visionary, man. And like, I am manifesting a healing organism that's going to help transform humanity to a higher state of consciousness.
Right.
And in order to accomplish that, I'm going to need lots of facilities.
Yeah.
Now, listen, do I think it's going to happen overnight? No, but I'm relentless, man. And right. I'm a warrior and I'm going to make it happen. We're at the place now where we have all of our SOPs and protocols down, and like, you know, we've
been a franchise kind of model style.
I guess we could say franchise, mm-hmm. but like if it is franchise, it's got to be with the right people.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing about this business and like this industry is that people heal to the ability that they do at our facility, not from an egotistical standpoint, but it's because we really care.
Yeah.
We're really good at what we do because we all have our own personal experiences with healing with the medicine. And it's our purpose to do what we're doing. It's our purpose to help people heal. And if people think that they're just going to come in and like, you know, oh, this sounds like a great business to get into, kind of like with what happened with medical cannabis and stuff like that.
Right.
If the intention isn't right, the healing won't be as good.
Yeah.
And so then you'll like lose the actual efficacy of what we've created.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, with the right people, 100%, man. Yeah,
that's awesome,
dude. Yeah. And listen, I want to get one out here sometime.
I know a guy. Nah, man. And I mean, I love it, man. I think that it's, and there is a couple facilities around here.
Yeah.
And I've done some digging into them and I have never experienced them. I was out in Salt Lake when I did mine. And, you know, I've been close to, you know, booking it and going in, but if I'm doing it, I want to come down there and see you guys and do it down there. You know what I mean? And, but I, even going through the reviews and stuff on what they had on there, a lot of it was like, oh, it just kind of feels like you're in a, you know, in a medical office room and it's cold and it's, you know what I mean? Like it's not that to me. And that's kind of how the one that I did was. It wasn't necessarily just like that, but it was kind of, you know, they walk in, they sit you in like a chair, they give you a pillow, they shut the lights out, they hook you up and you're just there, you know what I mean? And it wasn't, I was sitting in like a dentist chair, you know? And so it wasn't,
yeah,
and then whenever it came out of it, it was immediately like, they knew, must have knew when it was done, right? So it was like, as soon as it's kind of, they come in, they knock, they come in, like, you're good? I'm like, yeah, flip the lights on, unhook you, like, all right, we'll see you. You know what I mean? And that was it. And it was still awesome. Like, I got a lot from it.
Yeah.
But, you know, hearing you talk about what you guys do is like, that's a whole different atmosphere.
Well, like when we were putting our company together, I was like, all right, if I was going to have a psychedelic experience, it would not, I would not want it to be in a medical facility.
Yeah.
Like that sounds like awful
terrible.
To me, right?
Yeah.
And so Christina, my other half, she is amazing at designing and she made it very aesthetically pleasing and comfortable. And it's basically like going to a day spa.
Yeah.
Okay. But we're still a medical facility. So like you get your own treatment rooms, a recliner chair, there's like diffusers going off and meditation music.
Yeah.
Eye mask because this is a chemically induced meditation at the deepest level possible, blanket for comfort. And then we also built our company on the what not to do's. We had heard like stories from people that we knew that had went to ketamine clinics and asked them what they didn't like about the treatments. Well, at a lot of facilities, the nursing staff will go in and out of the room the whole time, like every 10 minutes to check on you and check your vitals and all kinds of stuff like that. That
pulls, it separates you.
Yep. It pulls people out of the actual psychedelic experience. So we set up cameras in the rooms and at our nursing station, there's a monitoring station. So we keep eyes on everybody from a distance so we don't have to disrupt them. People have call buttons in case they need anything. Another thing that we did is we built an integration room. A lot of people had said they would do treatments at other facilities and then right after their treatment was over while they were still disoriented from the medication.
I got in my car and drove away.
Yeah, see, that's not cool.
Yeah, like, I literally talk about that. I'm like, I remember I'm like, come stop. I like go to the bathroom. I'm like up against the wall peeing, you know, and then I stumble out and she's like, all right, like you're good. And I was like, and I was in Salt Lake, never been there before. Hadn't even made it to my Airbnb yet. I literally got off the plane and went straight to the facility.
Yeah.
And, you know, I walk out and I'm getting in my truck. And like you said, you're like dissociated, right? So I'm like one eye in it, trying to like drive back. And it was, and then I was just like overwhelming. You know what I mean? Like now it's like you're kind of anxious through that. I laid down, I took a nap. I felt way better when I got up and got moving. But I'm like, I couldn't, like, it was not ideal.
No, well, so like going back to neuroplasticity and us being these biological computers that can be programmed, after we come out of our treatments, our brain is being programmed to feel the way that we feel after our treatments, yeah. right? So if like you come out of this session and all of a sudden you're basically creating more PTSD because yeah. you're like not feeling safe and you're disoriented and you're being ushered out into a car yeah. or like I can't believe anybody would let you drive home after something yeah. like that. Like that's not okay, but we have an integration room which has like big, fluffy, comfortable couches. People get 2 hours in the treatment rooms. The treatment lasts for about an hour. You get a whole nother hour to integrate back and kind of process what happened during your experience. And then if people want to continue to stay and relax or journal or whatever, we have an integration room which is very calming and very comfortable. And we don't kick anybody out of the facility after yeah. their treatments are over yeah. like that.
That's huge.
Yeah, man.
And when you say you have your doctors, too, that help now, is that something, what do you say, like they kind of have calls with them or meetings with them after they do it? What's like kind of, what's the integration phase, per se, of like the client gets done, they sign up, they come and do the treatment, what happens then?
Well, so they first meet with Dr. Ferber, who's our medical director and psychiatrist. The cool thing about Dr. Ferber is he's been a psychiatrist for over 60 years, man, but his first LSD experience was in 1957 in a clinical study.
Wow.
Okay? He was friends with Ram Dass and Timothy Leary. He lived with Osho for a number of years. And so, like, he's basically like an OG when it comes yeah, to psychedelics. Yeah. So it's like a very different vibe. Our facility is where East meets West. It's where science meets spirituality. Mm. After they get approved by Dr. Ferber, they do a medical history with our nursing staff. And then they start embarking on their psychedelic or ketamine journey, where it's 2 treatments a week over a 3-week period, or 1 treatment a week over a 6-week period for our professionals that can only make it in yeah. one time a week. But the thing is that we do pre and post integration. So like one of our nurses who every single person at our facility has done the treatments.
Yeah.
Okay. Our doctor, our nursing staff, everybody's done the ketamine treatments. Yeah. So they prep people, talk to them, make them feel comfortable, might do some breathing exercises with them or something yeah. like that. And then after the treatments are over, sometimes people want to speak immediately and they want to process what happened,
yeah.
or sometimes people don't. And so instead of integrating them or processing their psychedelic experience with them that day before they come in for their next treatment, we'll always check on them the next day, give them a call. But when they get into the chair before their next treatment, we make sure we try to process yeah. what happened for their last experience and have them set an intention of what they're trying to accomplish that day.
Wow. Yeah, dude, that's incredible, bro. Thanks. Charles, what's the name of the facility?
Myself Wellness.
Myself Wellness.
Yeah, we're in Bonita Springs, Florida, and you know, it's really changing people's lives in amazing ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the, you know, being focused on, or not necessarily focused, but aware of the, you know, entrepreneurs, the business people, because again, those are the people that are out there shaping, changing, creating, right? And so you can, you know, being able to help the right ones, it's that ripple effect.
Yeah.
Well, right. Because now it's the environment that everybody starts to be in.
100%, man. Mm-hmm. Listen, like, you know, when I tell people, like, I didn't start this company with Christina because I wanted to sell ketamine treatments to people. I started it because I didn't want people to feel the way that I used to feel, because mm-hmm. there's no way for a human being to have to live. And so, like, the way that we look at our company is very outside the box compared to what you would normally think yeah. of when it's building a company. I said, as long as we just focus on helping people and yeah. helping the next person heal, the universe is going to take care of the rest of it, because yeah. we have the right intention,
yeah.
you know? And so I think, like, that's not just with our company, but it's for anybody that's building a company out there. I mean, a great example of this is John Schnatter from Papa John's. Mm-hmm. I read his book recently, and he's, you know, it's like better pizza, better ingredients, you know, better people. And it's like, when you make sure that you take everything to the next level and you're doing everything to the best of your ability, I think that that's really what's going to shine and show people that you're in it for the right reasons and have the right intention. And it's going to build that level of trust.
Yeah.
I mean, we do tons of marketing and we have a great PR company, and, you know, I'm doing a lot of speaking about psychedelics and the yeah. movement and stuff. But our biggest leads come from word of mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, like, once people come in and they get treated the way they do at our facility,
it's
and everything. It's like, and you build that rapport with people and you're giving people these profound psychedelic experiences, like where it's, you know, one of the most amazing experiences you could possibly imagine having, people go and tell everybody they know about it. You know, it's like, it's hard not to, hence the reason why I started screaming from the rooftops about this stuff, man.
Oh man, that's good, dude. I mean, yeah, I feel like for me, and I'm that person too. Anytime I do something that I find value in there, it helps me. I love to share it because I always want to find the next unlock and then help that to be unlocked for somebody else, right? And you know, that's our side on the, you know, with our roofing company and everything we do, right? It's, you know, I always say that it's one thing to tell people about your business. It's another thing to have other people tell people about your business.
Yeah.
Right. And when that becomes the way that you find customers and the way that you build and by truly just doing a good job and serving people, you know, the money always comes with it, you know, but it's hard. It's hard to not fall into the masses, right? You see what other people are. I'll catch ourselves doing it all the time, right? You start doing certain marketing or what other people are doing, and it's like you just follow it, fall into what everyone else does. And, you know, you've constantly got to be able to pull yourself back from that and you know, remind yourself why you're doing it and that your impact is different than anybody else's. You know what I mean?
You know, it's crazy because, like, back to the part where I was looking for outside validation, right? And I just wanted to prove myself to people, basically. Yeah. I sat down with a veteran and he'd been suffering for like almost 2 decades, man, and nothing had ever worked for him. And he's crying on the couch and his wife's crying on the couch and I'm sitting there and they just didn't think anything was going to work for them.
Man. Yeah.
He's like, nothing's ever going to work for me. You know, he's basically ready to take his own life. And when I saw the emotion coming out of them like that, it hit me that day. And I went into Dr. Ferber's office and I broke down into tears, man. And I was crying. And the reason that I was crying is because I forgot why I started this for a second. It was too ego fueled. I was like, oh, I just want everybody to know that we're doing amazing stuff. And it was all about this self-validation. And I had forgot for a blink of a moment that it was really just about helping other people.
Yeah.
And I vowed from that day forward to never lose sight of that again. And I haven't, man. So it's like, all I care about is holding people's hands and assisting them on their healing journey. And like when you come to our facility, a lot of the times you'll catch me in the integration room helping people process stuff and just sharing.
Huge,
well, it's what you got to do, man. Yeah. You know, it's like, listen, I'm in pure understanding now that I went through everything that I went through in my life to get to where I'm at so I could reach back and help other people. So it's like, it's a from dark to light scenario. And everything it is, we just don't realize it. You know, it's like, I used to be like sick from not taking opiates and stuff. And I'd be looking up at the sky and I'd be in tears and I'd be crying and I'd be like, God, why am I like this? Why do you hate me so much? Like, how come I can't fix myself? How come I can't be like everybody else?
Yeah.
And the truth is that I didn't realize it at the time, but God gave me my biggest blessing possible. And my biggest blessings came from my darkest days. Mm. You know, I had all of those substance abuse issues and all of the dark days that I went through. But it's like David Goggins talks about, man, it's like I studied the dark and I learned a lot then. And I studied the dark until I became the light. Mm. And now I get to go back in the dark and help pull other people out, man.
That's good, bro.
Yeah. So that's everything was perfect. Man. Everything was perfect the whole time, man. Even when I was going through all that suffering all those years, I just didn't realize it. And that's what I tell people when I'm sitting on the couch with them a lot of the time. They can't figure out why they're going through what they're going through and they don't see that light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm like, listen, I know it doesn't make sense right now, but one day you're going to get to a point where you've healed enough that you're going to look back and see where you're at right now and go, I get it now.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. That's why I went through that. Now I can use my story and share it to help inspire other people.
Yeah. Nah, man, it's powerful, man. And you know, that's the hard part with the, you know, the big pharma, right? That's the cycle that we're in with the opiates and the, you know, all the prescriptions and all of these things to just, I mean, one, it's obviously the money side. Right. That's obviously a huge piece to it. But it's also like you're saying, you know, going through the experience starts to unlock this level of creativity and innovation. And all of a sudden, you don't always want that. They don't always want that. Right. And so it's like that's control. You being able to, like you said, kind of step out and start your business is the first step of kind of the journey to realize that maybe you can actually create or control more of the things that you have in your life than you think you do.
100%, man. And listen, like, you know, with the pharma companies and stuff, I mean, we're talking about like legal drug dealing at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this stuff isn't even like, you know, the kind of drugs you would normally think about talking about, but like, you know, antidepressants where people have to go and they have to get their script filled every single month. month, and like it's really not giving them any kind of relief. And now you've got this reoccurring revenue every month for a medication that you're putting people on that's actually probably causing them to have more issues than they did to begin with.
Yeah.
I know from my own personal history where like I had been put on strings of pharmaceutical medications to try to, you know, give me this sense of relief so I wouldn't self-medicate anymore.
Yeah.
And it always just made me feel worse off than I did to begin with.
Yeah.
I would take the medications, they wouldn't work, then I'd stop taking them, then I'd feel even worse.
Yeah.
And so I always ended up relying and resorting to like the things that did make me feel good, which was usually drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
But the thing is that this is going to complete, you know, we got one guy off 11 different medications during the process of his treatments.
And how long of a, how, what was the time frame on something like that?
3 weeks. Yeah. Listen, man, I got one of my, so my son, Charlie, he's in school and he's about 4.5 years old, right? And one of his buddies in his class, his dad is a veteran. Okay. And we were hanging out one day and he's just like, hey man, you know, it was one of the first times I met him and we were talking about what we did. He thought I was nuts. He was like, oh yeah, like psychedelic therapy, like you're crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And a couple of months later, we were at another event and he's like, hey man, I've heard more about psychedelics for therapy for veterans. And he's like, and I'm starting to feel kind of intrigued about it. Next time I see him, listen, man, I really think I need to come and see you and do these treatments because, you know, I'm actually going through some things and I just don't talk about it. He comes in and he starts doing the treatments. After his fourth treatment, he came in and knocked on my office door and he's like, hey, man, do you got a minute? Can I talk to you? And I'm like, yeah, what's going on? He came and he sat down at my desk and he looks at me. He's like, why isn't the VA telling anybody about this? He's like, I was just on 9 medications and I'm off all of them, bro.
Yeah.
And he was only 4 out of 6 treatments in. He was off 9 different medications that the VA had him on. And to this day, he's still off all of his meds.
Wow.
You know, it's like we got a 19-year-old girl off 8 different medications that her psychiatrist had her on. And so it's like, yeah, it's bad for business.
Yeah,
you know, it's 100%. Like it's like, you know, they want to be in the business of treating symptoms and not actually helping people heal.
Yeah,
but when you're mission driven, and listen, and this goes to ketamine treatment facilities too. There's a lot of treatment facilities out there that are running low dosed IVs on people, which is just scraping the surface of what needs to be accomplished. And that's the pharmaceutical paradigm of let's treat your symptom again. Also,
yeah,
that's why we are more of a deep dive facility.
Right, you're integrating.
Yeah, and we're giving people these deeply profound psychedelic experiences because that's what saved my life. It wasn't just taking the medicines. It was, you know, having these psycho-spiritual experiences that gave me the ability to love myself enough to actually want to change my life.
Well, I think a hard part too, man, is, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, opiate addiction and those things is when I hear you say you help somebody, you know, get off of 9 and 11 medicines and you do that in a span of 3 weeks. An opiate addict battling to get clean, 3 weeks is a long, like, right? I mean, you're talking, that's not even a dent in what it is to come off of that stuff, right? It's like 3 weeks is you slipping, falling 3 or 4 more times, falling back into it, getting clean, being miserable, potentially losing your job, right? It's like to be able to start to come off of that that's the hardest thing. They fear the fact of coming off the drug because it's so miserable. You literally want to kill yourself.
100%. Listen, man, I had one of my really good friends that I used to rip and ride with back in the day, and we used to get high together, okay? And I, you know, got clean and I started the facility and I noticed that he was still struggling on social media. And like, we were the same. We'd put 6 months of sobriety together and then we'd always end up relapsing.
Yep.
And sometimes we'd be getting ready to go to a meeting and he'd come pick me up at my house and he'd look at me and be like, we're not going to go to a meeting today.
Yeah.
And we'd end up ripping and riding.
Yeah.
The truth is though, is like, I brought him into the clinic and we treated him and he's been sober for over 2.5 years now, man.
Wow.
And like, you know, this is a guy who came out of his first treatment and I walked in and he's got tears running down his eyes. And I'm like, how was it, man? He goes, forget a 28-day stay in rehab. I just learned more in that. I just got more in that hour session than I've got. And he had been to rehab like 9 or 10 times.
That's what I'm saying.
Already.
Rehab is, it's not even, because they're not doing these things because you can't put someone through rehab and say, okay, at the end of rehab, you're just clean. You're good now. That's not it. You've got to rebuild the mind. You've got to reframe the mind. You've got to reprogram it. And that's the hardest part of getting clean because it's not necessarily the, you know, it's not you not wanting to change. It's the receptors and the way that your body craves it and operates and needs it that you can't That's the pattern you can't break. Well, see, if you get clean, you ain't clean.
No, 100%, man. And listen, like, whether it's drugs or alcohol or food or sex or whatever it is, these are all just symptoms of an underlying issue, meaning we're self-medicating something. And the problem with trying to get an addict sober is that you take the drugs and alcohol out of the equation, and now you're stuck with the symptoms again, which makes life miserable.
Yeah.
That's what I used to say is like, listen, if this is what it's going to feel like for the rest of my life, I'm just going to get high again because I can't take this anymore. Yeah. That's where psychedelics are different. See, what people don't know a lot of the time is that Bill Wilson, who is the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, was actually in detox. And they gave him an experimental drug, which was a belladonna extract. It was a psychedelic experience, okay? So people hear about this white light flash scenario and Bill having visions of the future where there was a society of alcoholics helping each other stay sober. What they don't know is that was from a psychedelic experience. So AA was actually spawned from a psychedelic experience, okay? And then 20 years into Bill's recovery, he actually used LSD for his own depression and anxiety. Now, Bill wanted to incorporate LSD as the 13th step of the 12-step program, but because it was a program of abstinence by that time, they wouldn't let him do it. So it's like, the OG,
you're leaving out the one step.
Yeah, no, and it's because he thought that the 13th step would be this real, true spiritual awakening.
It's like
awakening,
the transcendence.
100%, because that's what the 12th step is as working these steps, you have this spiritual awakening, and now you get to go back and help other people. Listen, I started going to meetings when I was 16 years old, man, and I didn't get sober until I was in my mid-30s.
Yeah.
And the truth is that, or actually late 30s, and the truth is that it's because of the profound awakening and spiritual experiences that I had from psychedelics that I never got in the rooms of AA.
Mm.
And so believe it or not, and listen, I love AA and I'm a fan.
No matter how disciplined and structured you are.
I really don't go to meetings. I actually don't go to meetings anymore. And I'm not saying people shouldn't go to meetings. Everybody's on their own individual healing journeys. But like, you couldn't pay me to take drugs or alcohol anymore, man. Like, you literally could not pay me. I actually was having lunch with my mom earlier, and she was like, we were having this conversation about how one of my buddies asked me, he was like, listen, he's like, if I offered you $100 million, would you go party with me for the night? And I was like, no, man. And he's like, you're crazy. He's like, $100 million? And I'm like, listen, man, the way I'm manifesting these days, I go, if I go out with you and party that one night, I go, I'll probably end up losing everything. I said, but if I stay sober and keep going, I'll probably make more than $100 million.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that, bro. I love that, man.
Yeah, man.
It's, well, and I think that's the, you know, I always say too, it's one thing to have the discipline, have the structure, you know, get, you know, like with AA and things, like to be able to take the steps to get better, right? And you can do all of that as the individual. But the second you go back to the tribe or the community, right, the people that you're around that are the same, that you're right back into it again.
100%.
Right? And I think that's the biggest, that's the disconnecting with the ketamine side is that it'll, even if you go back to that, you have changed, right? You're not battling, because a lot of times when you get back, you're battling you.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all this internal animosity that gets created where when you can reset that, it's like, oh, wait a second. Now it's put me in the room with them doing drugs. I don't need them.
Yeah. And the truth is that it puts you to the place where like you're sitting around with people that are doing that kind of stuff and you're like, I really just don't want to be here. Yeah. And it's not because like, oh, I'm so scared I'm going to do drugs or whatever. It's kind of like, it's because I've already been there and done that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like I want to hang out with people like you, man.
Yeah.
Like people that are doing the deal, that are building something, that are, you know, influencing people to have better lives and creating something good for the world. You know, like you are who you surround yourself with at the end of the day. And like, I want to surround myself with highly successful people because I am a highly successful and want to be even more successful person. You know, there's this saying they say in AA and it's like, you know, you keep going to the barber shop and you're probably going to end up getting a haircut.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it's like, I mean, listen, like, I mean, I probably wouldn't want to, but like, you know, if you hang out with people that are doing drugs and drinking every single day, there might be that one day where you just are off and you're going to end up doing it again.
Yep.
But if I don't put myself in those situations, I'm not going to do it. Yeah.
Man, this is so good, dude. I got to come down, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely got to, man. I think that it's, and I love the idea of just the unlock, the understanding more. And you just, and I think it's one of those things too, that just, it calls you, right? When you hit certain, like it's, for me, anytime I've ever got into a psychedelic experience, it was always like one of the scenarios where like I'd been thinking about it. I talked to somebody, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden it's like there in front of you.
Yeah.
Right. And like, even this has been something I've been wanting to do. And then you're here this weekend and we talk about it. I'm like, all right, that's it. I'm locked in. I got to go down and come visit now. You know what I mean?
You manifest it.
Yeah,
right?
You do. You really do, man. And the power, like I've actually never thought about it the way that you just said it too, right? You said you're manifesting, you know, so powerful that if you went out and party for a night, you'd probably, you know, destroy it all.
Yeah.
Because that's where your mind's at. Right. Where if you keep your mind dialed on the other side, you're good. You're staying sober and you're, you know, creating and manifesting the positive. Right. You go do the negative things, you manifest negativity, man.
We're magnets.
Wow.
And so listen, and like this might be a little bit too far down the rabbit hole for some people, but like, you know, we are vibrational beings, man. And so it's like, I want to keep my vibe high.
Yeah.
And by doing that means keeping myself healthy.
Yep.
You know, and not putting, you know, toxins and stuff like that into my body, because if we're manifesting at this higher vibration, I want to be there.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude, that's good. Charles, I know we kind of did an on a spot podcast too. Just kind of jumped on it. So I appreciate you coming in and sharing, man. This is like really, really good stuff. So I can't wait to share this, man, because it's incredible. And what's the best way for people to connect with you too, man, and find you if they're looking?
So you can go to myselfwellness.com. I'm Charles Patti on social media, like on Facebook. And then my Instagram handle is Charles_Patti_official.
There you go, man. Well, dude, thanks for coming in. And I can't wait to come down and see you, my brother.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.